This is Word of Mouth on New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Coming up, forget about all those sad songs about loneliness. A series of ongoing studies point to the value of solitude in our always interacting, always on age. And artists celebrate free expression in the New Egypt. But we begin with the next installment of our 11 for 11 series of provocative thinkers taking on the challenges of our day. A new book by George Mason University Economics Chair Tyler Cowen has inspired spirited debate among Beltway and economic circles alike. Published only as an e-book, The Great Stagnation, How America Ate All the Low-Hanging Fruit of Modern History, Got Sick, and Will Eventually Feel Better, argues that America's economic growth plateaued in the 1970s. Median wages have stagnated since, he says, because we have eaten all the low-hanging fruit that enabled innovation to flourish and average income to grow across the board. Well, how can that be, we wondered, given the hundreds of conversations we've had with innovators and entrepreneurs of new ideas and technologies. So we invited Professor Cowen to tell us more. Professor Cowen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
What's your bullet point summary of the Great Stagnation?
If I look at my grandmother's life, she was born in 1905. The world completely changed from when she was a child to when she was middle-aged. If I look at my life, I was born in 1962. Other than the internet, it looks pretty much the same. So it used to be that standards of living would double every generation. But a lot of things like electricity, cars, air travel, we've now had them for a while. And we're not seeing the same kind of big changes that we had in American life in earlier generations.
One example that you'd use is like the dishwasher or refrigerator in the kitchen, pretty much the same as in the 1950s, albeit, you know, a little more efficient.
In fact, I cook in a 1950s kitchen, and it's not perfect, but it works pretty well. So kitchen change also has slowed down. Increases in life expectancy have slowed down. So when you look at a lot of different areas of human endeavor, progress is getting slower.
Well, maybe not a big difference in the kitchen, but in the home office or living room or your pocket is a computer or smartphone. The technical revolution from about 10 years ago, doesn't this count as innovation?
It does count. Communications have seen some phenomenal improvements. But look at some core household expenses. Look at real estate. Look at education. Look at healthcare. They're all a lot more expensive. It's not clear they're getting that much better. And if we look at education, the high school graduation rate in this country, it actually peaked in the late 1960s.
You're right. Information and communication is much cheaper. Food is much cheaper. So is a microwave oven that you can buy at Walmart for, you know, $29. So even if real wages have stagnated, is the ability to consume more figure into your calculation of prosperity?
Well, we can consume more in some areas, like flat-screen televisions are much cheaper. But when you add up the things that have gotten cheaper and then you compare the things which have gotten more expensive, what we find is that over the last decade, the typical household is not earning more. And since 1973, the typical household is earning only about 20 to 30% more. So the balance of gains and losses, it's not nearly as positive as we would like.
You also point out that GM employed 600,000 at its peak, but the iPod has created, what, fewer than 14,000 jobs? You know, Facebook, even though it serves hundreds of millions of people, has a staff of 2,000. Twitter, fewer than 300. So the old model of growth based on manufacturing, your point is what we're looking at is a new normal of growth, not trickling down, if I can call it that term.
It's simply harder at some point to come up with new ideas. Now, I do think we'll see bigger breakthroughs in the future, but we've had this great stagnation for almost 40 years now. I don't think it will literally end tomorrow. And when it comes to our personal and also governmental spending plans, we need to take into account that this is, for a while, the new normal.
Before we get too far off into theory, Professor Cowen, let's look at the numbers. Compare median income, family income between these two periods, 1947 and 73, and then 73 and 2004, if those are the right periods
sure.
You want to look at.
From 47 to 73, it more than doubled. That was a doubling of living standards. From 73 to 2004, it went up 22%. And since 2004, it's not gone up.
Okay, so why is technology slowed down? Why is innovation slowed, to your mind?
If you look at human history, you find periodically there are big bursts of progress, and then there are temporary plateaus. It's as if we had some new ideas like fossil fuels and powerful machines that came from the Industrial Revolution. We worked out the implications of those, for instance, cars, automobiles, electricity, powerful steam engines circling the globe with locomotives. And we've done those things, and now we're waiting for the next breakthrough. We've seen a breakthrough in communications, but that's a small part of the economy. And in a lot of other areas, like healthcare and education, they're growing parts of our economy, but they don't always give us as much value as we'd like.
Let's go through this idea of low-hanging fruit that our economy has already plucked. Point those out for us.
If you look at the first half of the 20th century, simply spreading electricity, flush toilets, automobiles, radio, typewriters to virtually everyone in America, once those things were invented, spreading them was a way to boost living standards very rapidly and relatively easily. That was an era of low-hanging fruit. If you look at the year 1900, about 6.5% of all American children graduated from high school. To take all the kids who weren't getting through high school and put them through high school, that was relatively easy. If you look now at the marginal kid who is not graduating from high school, that child is much harder to educate, and that's a case where it's not low-hanging fruit anymore.
Give us an idea of what, then, we do about something like that. How do we stimulate education, if that's possible?
Well, by the definition of low-hanging fruit, there isn't a simple answer, that we genuinely face hard problems. But one thing I recommend is I think American culture has lost a lot of its respect for science. It's a respect that science had in the 1950s and still the 1960s. People were excited about physics and computers and the moon race. And now we have a lot of excitement about gadgets. But in terms of role models and what talented young people want to do, I think there's an excess stress on finance and not nearly enough on production, engineering, and scientific discovery. That would be the first thing we could do.
So your proposal is kind of change the culture, elevate respect for scientists in this country, but we're looking at a large part of the public now dubious about even theories that are agreed upon by large parts of the scientific community. How do you change that culture?
It's a big step backwards, and the change has to come from bottom up, not from top down. I'm all for having the president, get on TV and lecture people about the importance of science, but I don't think that's really going to do it. It's when people themselves start seeing there's a problem and realizing this is the solution they need. That's part of why I wrote my book, to try to promote this pro-science message. But like you said, we've moved backwards on science when you look at, say, public discussions of climate change, so it's discouraging.
This is Word of Mouth's 11 for 11 series with big thinkers reflecting on the way that we live today. Economics professor Tyler Cowen is with us. His slim little e-book, The Great Stagnation, is creating quite a stir. New York Times columnist David Brooks called it the most debated nonfiction book so far this year. And writing in Forbes, Nick Schultz said it was possibly the most important nonfiction book this year that won't be published on paper. All right, how about this idea of natural resources? Free land, of course, ended with the frontier in the 19th century, but you pointed out a great deal of growth in the early 20th century and mid.
Free land was important in the 18th century. You could move from Europe, come to the United States, and the mere fact there was all this fertile land meant you would, with some hard work, almost automatically be richer than where you came from. That's gone. It's not that all the land is taken up. It's that land doesn't matter so much anymore. Easy education of very talented, very intelligent people. At the margin, that's also gone. Working through the implications of mixing fossil fuels and powerful machines. It's not completely gone, but a lot of those gains have come. We have cars. They get better, but we're not about to have flying cars. So odds are there are two main areas where I think we'll see future breakthroughs. One is the biosciences and medicine, and the other is the notion of really structuring our whole economy around the Internet. Which we're doing, but it's taking a lot longer than people had expected. So I think within 20 to 30 years, we will have additional major breakthroughs. We just have a fair amount of time to wait.
That's a long time to wait, Professor Cowen.
In the meantime, we need to be spending less personally and also through our government.
There are a number of economists and pundits, certainly, who say that we are entering a new gilded age. You know, it's the great divergence theory that the problem is with the distribution of wealth, of the gains made, not the growth rate. What's your take on this?
Well, there may be problems in both areas, but clearly there is a problem with the growth rate. In the last 10 years, there's been no new net job creation in the U.S. economy, and the average family's income hasn't gone up. Now, I think there's a separate problem where talented people, they're tending to seek out innovations in finance in areas which maybe benefit themselves but don't benefit the whole economy. It's as if they're learning to play this game like a heads I win, tails you lose game at the expense of the taxpayers. And that's an innovation which is not really a productive innovation. So that's also a problem.
I read a piece that you wrote for The American Interest. This was about the growing income inequality in the U.S. And the article cites data by, Stephen Kaplan and Joshua Raw, if I'm saying that properly, that finds a very strong role for the financial sector in driving the trend toward income concentration at the top, something that you just mentioned. Where is this leading us?
It's leading us to a world where banking is not stable, which we've already seen, and too much talent is chasing finance. If you look at a graduating class from Harvard, too many of the smartest people graduating want to head for financial careers than I personally am comfortable with. I think in terms of change, what we need to do is move away from a culture of bailouts and also, in general, limit the amount of leverage which we allow the financial sector to take on.
Limit the amount of leverage. I don't think I'm stepping too far to say that you're a free market libertarian. So is that a kind of level of regulation that you might support?
It is a regulation. I'm not crazy about having to support it. But if we're in a world where we're bailing out banks who go bad, I do think taxpayers can insist that these same banks, ex ante, not be allowed to take too much risk, because we will be on the hook for that. And having a lot of debt, having a lot of leverage, it is the main way that banks take a lot of risk. And I reluctantly come to the conclusion that we need to do something about that.
We're talking with Tyler Cowen, economics professor at George Mason University and author of The Great Stagnation, How America Ate All the Low-Hanging Fruit of Modern History, Got Sick, and Will Eventually Feel Better. It's a 15,000-word ebook that's packed a big punch in the blogosphere and now mainstream media. Cowen says that we're running out of good ideas for generating better human welfare, revenue, and jobs, and that we'd better get used to it. We'll be back with more of our 11 for 11 series of big thinkers and provocative ideas. Stay with us for more Word of Mouth on NHPR.
Ten ought to do it, don't you think? You think we need one more?
We're back with Word of Mouth's 11 for 11 series of conversations with big thinkers on the challenges of our day. George Mason University economist Tyler Cowen fits the bill. His book, The Great Stagnation, is buzzing around the blogosphere and has sparked a spirited debate among economists and policymakers about America's economic history and future. Well, here is one man who proposes that new ideas can get us out of this mess. President Obama addressing here a crowd at Penn State University in February.
We are going to have to win the future by being smarter and working harder and working together. If we want those jobs and businesses to thrive in the United States of America, we're going to have to out-innovate and out-educate and out-build the rest of the world.
So what's your take on that, Tyler Cowen? Can policy speed up economic growth?
Good words, but empty words.
Right
now, we're in a position of cutting back funding, say, for healthcare research. I don't blame our president for that. We're fiscally strapped. What we need to do is to control healthcare costs. We're not succeeding at doing that. And in terms of education, that's not really a federal government issue. It's up to state and local governments, and that will involve a lot of messy experimentation. So I think those successes are far away, and we won't see them in an Obama second term.
Well, one thing I'm hearing from you, unemployment right now in our society is a bit of a political pinata. The Obama administration says they inherited the mess. Republicans are blaming regulators and an uncertain business climate for lack of willingness to invest in jobs. Is this a partisan issue?
They're both wrong. In that sense, it's a partisan issue. Both sides are wrong. The real problem is that the underlying real economy is not innovative enough, not productive enough, not creating enough jobs. And that actually predates the financial crisis, and it has nothing to do with which party is in the White House or controlling Congress. It dates back to the earlier part of the noughties.
In one of the challenges to your book, this one by Brink Lindsey, he argues that it is not flat innovation, but it's actually demographic shifts that have slowed unemployment growth. You know, women in the job market plateaued, an aging population. What's your read on that?
I agree with Brink that that's an additional problem. It will become a more serious problem as we age. It is possible, we're not sure, but that our society becomes less innovative in terms of technology. A lot of innovations come from younger people. I don't think it's been the big problem up till now, but it will make the next 20 or 30 years harder than they otherwise would be.
What can a politician do about this? Are any trying?
Yeah, the first problem, of course, is our budget. And I think on that issue, most politicians are being fairly cowardly. Fixing our budget won't solve the innovation crisis at all.
And fixing our budget means not spending or reeling back
spending. Some mix of spending decreases and tax increases. And, of course, the two sides will differ on what's the right formula for that mix. But we're not addressing the imbalance at all. Everyone wants to hide behind someone else. That won't cure the innovation crisis, but it will mean the innovation crisis doesn't have to bankrupt us. We're not dealing with it. When it comes to according more status to science, as you mentioned, we're moving in the wrong direction. I do have great faith in this country. There's a lot of talent here, and I think we will get out of the great stagnation. But right now, I'm not seeing the positive trends I would like to have in this nation.
Okay, maybe not the internet, but how about other innovations? Biotech, a big one. Green technology that Obama is pressing for, could that be an innovation revolution?
Green energy may come, but keep in mind the big goal of green energy is simply to prevent environmental catastrophe. I'm all for doing that.
Well, maybe. Maybe to get us off of dependency on foreign oil, I think, is a big goal.
In any likely future, green energy will cost at least as much as oil is costing us now. It will be worth making the switch to preserve the environment. But again, it's not a gain. It's a thing we need to do basically to break even. And I think we should do it, but I don't look to green energy to save us.
How about the creative economy? Over the past decade especially, or maybe let's say two decades, the idea that more bohemian, intellectual, creative careers, you know, people doing what they love. So calling it the happiness dividend rather than focusing on making money, is there a value there that's not so easily measured?
There is, and I think that we as a society are learning how to enjoy things more without always having money on the line. And that's a positive development. It's one of the optimistic trends. But the problem is we've made a lot of plans based on revenue and jobs and finances and being able to repay debts. And there's this disconnect between our attitudes and our spending patterns. And if we could cure that disconnect, it would help, you know, bridge over until the next big wave of innovation comes.
Could you go into that disconnect for us a little more? What do you mean by that?
A lot of people are becoming what I call threshold earners. They're saying, I can earn, you know, $60,000 a year, $40,000 a year, $100,000 a year, whatever the number is, $1 million a year, and more money won't make me happier. They're stopping at some point, and they're saying they want a more relaxed life or to enjoy their time or their families. And that's a positive development, but we cannot do that and at the same time make all of our plans as if we're going to have 3 or 4% growth. That is, we need to make that choice. But we do have, I think, overall a more tolerant society, in many ways a more egalitarian society. And those are big positive developments, and we're enjoying those.
Enjoying them, but if we're looking at a future of maybe 20 more years of economic stagnation, I mean, we're not going to be twiddling our thumbs. What's your suggestion?
Well, suggestion for whom, of course, is the question. I think we'll see some areas like communications where we really will have phenomenal gains. Those are just a relatively small part of the economy. But one suggestion I have to people is basically develop some cheap hobbies which are dependent upon the parts of the economy which are growing very rapidly. And that's the way you can at least partially overcome the great stagnation by specializing some of your own interests in areas which are doing well.
You published The Great Stagnation only as a digital download, so you're taking advantage of that innovation, clearly.
That's exactly right. And even though right now most people don't have e-readers, you can read the book just by buying it and printing it out. And I think we're very rapidly moving to a scenario where most people will be reading more online or with Kindles.
Right. By the way, we do have a link to the digital download. It's $4, a fairly quick read. And it, as you mentioned, if you don't have a Kindle or an e-reader, you can actually print it. So
most books are too long, I think. You know, shorter books is one of the innovations that's about to hit us.
I wonder, Professor Cowan, are you optimistic about our country's economic future?
Across a 30-year time horizon, I am extremely optimistic. Across the next 10 years, I'm fairly pessimistic. But I think the good sides of this country, which are creative human individuals, belief in individual liberty, strong emphasis in our culture on commerce and business, those are with us. They're still pretty strong, and I don't see them going away.
And what do you say to those who would say, well, let's get off our duff and stimulate the economy with more spending? No way?
I don't think it's going to work. It's exactly the opposite remedy of what we need. What we need is more innovation, more production. That's harder to do. It's less of a quick fix.
Well, a very provocative conversation. Really interesting to talk with you, Professor Tyler Cowen. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Tyler Cowen, Chair of the Economics Department at George Mason University and author of The Great Stagnation. How America Ate All the Low-Hanging Fruit of Modern History, Got Sick, and Will Eventually Feel Better. It is available as a digital download. We have a link to the book and to a number of articles and some criticisms of the book. That's all at wordofmouthradio.org, where we welcome your comments and thoughts on our conversation, and also your suggestions for 11 for 11 guests. You can also comment or follow Word of Mouth's innovations, yes, we'll call it that, on Facebook and Twitter. Coming up on Word of Mouth, feeling lonesome? It's good for you. And artistic freedom on the rise in post-Mubarak Egypt. That's when Word of Mouth returns after the news from the BBC here on New Hampshire Public Radio, Monday through Thursday at noon and online anytime at wordofmouthradio.org.